They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
You're listening to a live program tonight at Dixie Broadcasting, and you're tuned to another Pelican Pages segment right here at DixieBroadcasting.com. For many of our listeners, you're already familiar with our Pelican Pages segments that we do here several times a month at Dixie Broadcasting, but for those that may not be familiar, let us just give you a brief rundown on what this is. Pelican Publishing Company is the major publishing house in the South for pro-Southern titles, as well as a number of other types of works that they publish annually. But Pelican Publishing is also one of the sponsors here at Dixie Broadcasting, and so from time to time we like to have authors that they have published on the broadcast with us to talk usually about new books that are out, and that's the case tonight. We have a very special guest with us, someone of whom we've actually played some of his speeches and lectures on Southern heritage and Southern history in the past. And now he is the author of a brand new book entitled Redeeming American Democracy, Lessons from the Confederate Constitution. And joined with me here in the studio via the telephone line tonight is Professor Marshall DeRosa. Professor, thank you for being on the broadcast with us. Professor DeRosa is a professor of political science at Florida Atlantic University and has been there since 1990. He is well known to many of us here in the Southern movement, has spoken at a number of different meetings and gatherings around the cause, such as the Abbeville Institute, the Stephen D. Lee Institute, and I believe probably some of the League of the South Institute meetings in the past as well. So now, Professor, if you would, for many of us that have not gone into the particulars of the Confederate Constitution, we are a little bit at a loss as to what the differences are between the Confederate Constitution and the U.S. Constitution of 1788. So would you just go through briefly some of the significant differences between the two?
All the other safeguards, it had a Bill of Rights that was put into the text of the Constitution. There are so many, I'm kind of losing my train of thought.
Sure.
Suffice it to say that it prevented the centralization that would allow an elite group of nationalist politicians, along with their supporters, whether it's the corporations, the political class, international leaders, to, use the word conspire, to manipulate the government to the advantage of that small group, to the disadvantage of the rest of the American public. Let me give you an example. This is Article 5 of the Confederate Constitution. Upon the demand of any three states legally assembled in their several conventions, the Congress shall summon a convention of all the states to take into consideration such amendments to the Constitution as the said states shall concur in suggesting at the time when the demand is made. Should any of the proposed amendments to the Constitution be agreed on by the said convention, voting by states, and the same be ratified by the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, or by conventions and two-thirds thereof, as in one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the General Convention, they shall thenceforward form a part of this Constitution, but no state shall, without its consent, be deprived of its equal representation in the Senate. Now, when you contrast that to the U.S. Constitution, you have to have two-thirds of the states petition the Congress, or else the Congress needs to convene a constitutional convention. But this is much more based upon the states. Three states could get the entire nation together as states and address the issues of the day. So, you know, that's just evidence that the states were the basic units of the government, not this notion that it is a national democracy and simply a majority to be manipulated by the political class in the nation's capital.
Well, certainly the nationalists like the Henry Clays of his day and time, or the internationalists like the Bushes and the Clinton families today, wouldn't be happy with those proposals, would they?
Yeah, I mean, imagine that if, you know, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, under the Confederate Constitution, if it were applicable and operational in America today, could convene a constitutional convention that all the other states would have to come and listen to their grievances. And this could be an ongoing process. So if, you know, some sort of solution to the pressing problems of the day weren't forthcoming, then those states had the ultimate option of seceding from the Union. And the chill that that would put on the national elite to be much more receptive to the demands of the people of Georgia, Alabama, and Florida is just phenomenal. The Supreme Court would be very reluctant to issue decisions that these states thought were either unacceptable or unconstitutional.
Yeah, it certainly would be much more preferable to having a group of nine men and women on the federal Supreme Court doing the same thing all by themselves instead of having the states get together and do that.
Right.
It sounds very much like the what was proposed in the Confederate Constitution, with the states calling for the Constitutional Convention, would have been about as close on this large of a scale as you could get to the true ideals of real democracy that we find even as far back as Athens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a very democratic process at the local level. So, and when it says, when these conventions are being convened, we're talking about delegates being elected at the local level, keeping those at the higher levels accountable to them.
And of course, these gentlemen who were framing the Confederate Constitution, they put these differences in because they had those years of experience with the U.S. federal Constitution to know what its weaknesses were and to understand its predilection for centralization down the road. I'm assuming, is that correct?
No, that you're absolutely correct. That's when I was made reference to the late antebellum speeches. It's just amazing how perceptive they were in anticipating the trends that were developing in the mid 19th century and where those trends would lead if they weren't stopped at that time. So, you know, they knew their history. They were very familiar with the emergence of empires and how those empires would consolidate power at the capital of the empire, subjecting those under its rule to, to be honest about it, it's tyranny.
Yes, sir.
In this country, we don't use that word. It's sort of an old-fashioned word, but, you know, we have hard and we have soft tyranny, and if the government, national government, is taking 30, 40, 50% of your income, that's pretty tyrannical.
I think we would.
Both in 1776 and in the South in 1861 would agree with that.
Well, I think most Southerners and most Americans today would probably agree that we're on the verge of moving from that soft tyranny to the hard tyranny even today, because of where we're at. Folks, we're interviewing Marshall DeRosa, who is the author of a brand new book from Pelican Publishing entitled "Redeeming American Democracy: Lessons from the Confederate Constitution." Professor DeRosa is very well known across the Southern movement. He's spoken at a number of different events and is considered the premier expert on the Confederate Constitution today. This is a book that you definitely ought to take the time to take a look at. You can look at it on the Pelican website by going to epelican.com. You can even do that while you're listening to this interview, epelican.com, and click on the browse feature up at the top of the website and just put in either Professor DeRosa's last name, which is spelled D-E-R-O-S-A, DeRosa, or put in lessons from the Confederate Constitution, and it'll pull it right up there with just a few of those keywords put in there. By the way, if you purchase the book from epelican.com online there, you actually can purchase it at a reduced sale price if you go to the website to do that. You'll also be able to find this book if it's not already there. It'll be in all of the major bookstores across America within the next few days or next week or so. So it's a brand new book, but it's a book that every person involved in the Southern Movement ought to have a copy of. And you ought to teach it to your children and then pass it on to a teacher or somebody else that you know as well and let them borrow it. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Professor DeRosa. We're going to talk about how some of these different principles from the Confederate Constitution are actually applicable to today's crises that we find in the American political scheme. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. A famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home, something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice. All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages segment, and we're talking to Professor Marshall DeRosa, who is the author of a brand new book by Pelican Publishing entitled Redeeming American Democracy, Lessons from the Confederate Constitution. And for those of you that may not be familiar with Professor DeRosa, he is considered by many in the Southern movement today to be the foremost scholar on the Confederate Constitution itself. And this book does a remarkable job of not only addressing the differences between the Confederate Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, but also bringing that up to today and applying those principles of the Confederate Constitution to the different current American issues that are on the political landscape today. And it's certainly something that is thought-provoking and helps to bring to light just how brilliant our Confederate forefathers were and how much foresight they had about the things that were coming down the pike if they were not successful on the battlefield. If you are listening to us at this time, then we hope you'll also take a minute while you're sitting there at the computer and go to epelican.com. That's epelican.com. And that's the Pelican Publishing website. You can click on the browse button at the top there to do a search for this book and type in Confederate Constitution or type in DeRosa, the author's name, and you can pull the book up and look at it, read the review of the book, even while we're talking about it on the interview tonight. So, Professor, thank you, and welcome back to the broadcast.
Thanks, Ray.
Now, we've talked about the Confederate Constitution in its historical context, and, of course, don't have near enough time to go into the detail we'd like to do during one interview, but tell us, if you would, Professor DeRosa, how would we Americans approach some of the major issues today that we currently face in America if we were under the Confederate Constitution as opposed to the U.S. Constitution, which we are currently under in some form or fashion? The way I'd like to do this, if I may, is just introduce several different subjects, and I'll let you comment on them as we go. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay, the first issue is immigration, and in particular, illegal immigration.
Well, let me clarify insofar as the commonality between the Confederate Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. Constitution. They're both establishing central nationalized governments. The Confederate is an improvement on the U.S. Constitution because they learned from experience that there were defects in the U.S. Constitution that facilitated centralization, thereby taking government away from the people. So as the Anti-Federalists did in the Philadelphia Convention of 1787, they were looking for ways to improve upon that U.S. model. And that was reinvigorating, as I mentioned, states' rights, because the states, that government is closest to the people, and therefore is much more accountable to the people. But all governments, state government, national government, U.S., Confederate, have this strong tendency towards centralization, because that makes power much more obtainable. And where there's power, that's naturally the essence of politics. So something such as immigration is, when we see it, it's a symptom of something else. And that symptom is that this is centralization in its ongoing work to consolidate political power. So you ask yourself, and you say, my gosh, we have laws, why aren't they enforced? We have immigration laws. Why are they allowing people unlawfully to come into this country? And then they're talking about giving them rights, such as driver's license, which is more or less access to the ballot box. You know, what's going on here? And what's going on, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and that in the minds of the elite, those borders that we're talking about, the United States as an autonomous nation, really has ceased to exist. And when you look at the United Nations and the intellectuals and the elites, the nations are the problem today. In the mid-19th century, in America, it was the states. Today, it's the nations. So they want to consolidate powers. In this case, between Canada, United States, and Mexico, so that you have this super state, similar to what we have in the European Union. Once again, it's power being consolidated so the elites can much more effectively manipulate political, social, economic, and cultural events. So, under that model, if the national government's not doing its job in enforcing immigration laws, because they have this covert plan to consolidate power between the Mexican, the Canadian, and the U.S. elites, then those states, if they have the virtue to pursue that route, to protect what we would call a democratic republican process, government based upon the consent of the people, those states would convene a constitutional convention, just three states, and hold the national government accountable. If they persisted, because they have this hidden agenda of consolidation that they don't want to talk about publicly, but they discuss it among themselves, if they persist in not enforcing the law, then those three states, or one state, reserves the option to divorce itself from the national government, to secede. So you would take a state such as Florida. If Florida's worth saving as a, quote, democratic republic, that is, a government that is accountable to the governed, then they would certainly say, this isn't working out, we're being manipulated, this isn't in our interest. On the other hand, if they approve of that agenda, then they would go along, because they would, of course, support what the elites are doing. So under the Confederate model, it would still be based upon the consent of the governed. And hopefully, there's enough political virtue left in this country where some states would simply say, after, you know, fleshing this out in this constitutional convention with three states, brought all the states together to hold the national government accountable, and if that was, you know, they were unsuccessful in doing that, they would simply go off on their own. And so the Confederate Constitution just takes power away from the elites and puts it where it belongs, in the people. That doesn't mean the Confederacy was not you know, didn't believe in a natural aristocracy. They did, but that would be a natural aristocracy at the state level, at which the people within that state could hold them accountable. So immigration, you have that tendency of centralization, but there are mechanisms where you could stop it. And by stopping it, you would preserve what they tried to preserve in 1776, and then again in 1789. And that's the government based upon the consent of the governed. And that's what we're losing today. And that's what the framers of the Confederate Constitution were so much aware of, because even on a smaller scale, they saw what the Republicans, prior to the Republicans, the Whigs, were attempting to do: manipulate government to the benefit of a few, to the disadvantage of the many.
And you're certainly right. That's exactly where we're at today with the internationalists and the globalists that are running Washington, D.C., to the demise of the rest of us. And I can't help but think that in listening to your words there, that many of the southern states, if we had that option under the Confederate Constitution, would exercise it, because I think there are many of the southern states who understand that we are intentionally being, our population is being watered down and created, turned into a third world country, so that we will be more easily controlled by Washington, D.C., because of the illegal immigration that's being allowed to persist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, many of our listeners, you'll be happy to know, Professor DeRosa, are very familiar through the broadcast here with some of those supranational treaties and organizations that you alluded to, such as NAFTA and the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the SPP. So how would the Confederate Constitution approach the issue of these multinational or supranational organizations and entities that are being forced upon America today?
Well, I teach international law, and you know, I try to stay current on the literature and developments with the international the Court of Criminal Justice and the. Let me put it this way, Ray. There are things happening at the transnational level, because even the word international is old-fashioned. The people that write in the area of international law, they don't like the word international because it has the word national in it.
Hmm.
And once again, they think nations are the problem. And so they like to use the word transnational. It transcends nations. Because nations, one of the key elements of the UN Charter is that the sovereignty of the nations will be preserved. And they, just like the sovereignty of the states in 1861 had to be dealt with by the centralizers, now it's the sovereignty of the nations that must be dealt with. So they're configuring these international tribunals that have jurisdiction, both civil and criminal, where the nations states are being made subordinate to these international or transnational organizations. So it's once again, if a state such as Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Texas, Vermont didn't like those trends under the Confederate Constitution, there are mechanisms in place in which they could either thwart them, stop them, and or divorce themselves from a national government that refuses to protect the federal republic that they're supposed to be an agent of, not the principal. So in other words, the Constitution, the Confederate Constitution, gives those states, just one, two, or three states. You could have three states that would convene the convention again, and I can't overemphasize how important that is from a political process point of view. But even if one state couldn't get another two states to go along with it, that one state would have the right to secession. But once it secedes, it confronts this new transnational centralization, in which it is now subordinate to a whole new class of political, economic, social, and cultural elites. And you think about the debate in the late antebellum period where the states were the problem, where Teddy Roosevelt, when he gave a speech in, I think it was 1910 or something like that, he said the states are the problem, they're an obstacle to progress, we have to focus on the national government, and that found its way into American jurisprudence and all the law schools, so they covertly just stripped all those protections. This was an incremental process, but they stripped them out of the Constitution by reinterpreting what those provisions are. But what's important about the Confederate Constitution, regardless of what those national elites do, the states still would control their own political destiny. But in today, 2007, now they confront this new hyper-centralization at the transnational level. And this is, I mean, it's a development that has just really picked up momentum. And, you know, most people in Washington, many congressmen aren't even aware of this, but because they're outside that inner circle. But when you look at the corporations, and that's, you know, that's, let's face it, it's the corporate powers that want to remove all these state and national borders because it's a more efficient way of conducting business. So that's one of the reasons why something such as, you know, the U.S. dollar might be replaced by a regional currency known as the Amero, just like the Euro replaced all those German, you know, the German mark, the Italian lira, the, not yet the British pound, the English pound, but they're moving in that direction.
Right.
French franc. It's just centralization running amok because it puts control in the hands of these unaccountable, unreachable elites.
And I know we'll have to save it for another time and another evening on the broadcast, but I would definitely like to hear you discuss at some point down the road, you know, what types of issues and challenges would one of our states today face if they were successful in finding some statesmen who were willing to exercise that that right of secession, and so that we would know exactly what we would be facing with some of those international pressures that would surely come. And I know we don't have time for that tonight, but I can only imagine a class of international law would certainly be an interesting thing in your classroom as opposed to some of those that I had at Georgia State University some years ago.
Yeah, what's interesting, you know, I'm down here in southeast Florida, and the students have been brainwashed until they get into a class like mine, but what's promising about that is they're very receptive to the truth. When they find out they've been lied to, you know, about Mr. Lincoln, the causes of the war, what the Confederacy stood for, I don't care what nationality, what race, what gender, they're receptive to the truth, and they don't appreciate the fact that they've been indoctrinated. And it's not easy to prove that to them because the facts speak for themselves.
Right.
And, you know, that is a bit optimistic, and, you know, this is digressing a bit, but that's one of the reasons why, you know, the internet is so important, because we're having this conversation, people could listen to it over the internet, but that's also why the United Nations has what's known as the Working Group on Internet Governance, and they are just a couple steps away from controlling
Southern heritage. From the messages on our garments that recall the heroic deeds of our forefathers, to our sponsorship of pro-Southern organizations and projects, nothing says proud to be Southern like Dixie Outfitters. Shop or request your free catalog today. Visit our website at DixieOutfitters.com or please give us a call at 1-866-916-5866. Comfort, style, heritage. Dixie Outfitters has it all.
All right, you're listening to another Pelican. Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting, and we're going to wrap this particular segment up with Professor Marshall DeRosa, author of the book Redeeming American Democracy, lessons from the Confederate Constitution. And one of the things that we always like to do, Professor, is to ask our different authors that we have on with us, how did you come in contact with Pelican Publishing in particular, and how did you come about choosing them as the publisher for this new book?
Well, the I published other books with academic presses, and those presses really weren't very effective in circulating the books. So, you know, they end up in university offices and libraries and things like that. And I've read some of Pelican's previous, some of their publications and was very impressed. So I contacted Mr. Calhoun and, wanted to see if he would be interested in publishing one of my, my next book. And I was very pleased that he decided to do so, because I wanted this book to get out to the people so it's read, not by academicians and professors, but read by people that can appreciate what the South was and is about. And what it was and is about is, like I said, self-government, a government based upon the consent of the people. So I just wanted to make a contribution to recovering some of those basic ideas from 1776 and 1789. Pelican Publishers is, very effective in getting their books in bookstores and such.
They
so
certainly
that people
are.
Can read them, but they're not just collecting dust on some library shelf or some, like I said, professor's office.
That's exactly right. Now, are there any other works that are in the works, maybe coming out in the future from Marshall DeRosa?
Well, a work in progress is dealing with executive power, and looking how the Supreme Court has interpreted, or I should say misinterpreted, the U.S. Constitution to enhance the power of the President of the United States beyond what the wildest imaginations of the framers. And there's a chapter in this current book, Redeeming American Democracy, where I contrast Lincoln, President Lincoln, with President Pierce. And it's going to be about leadership, and it's going to be about accountability. But more importantly, it's going to be about how the President of the United States has become, in many instances, and this is made clear in a couple of recent Supreme Court cases dealing with the Patriot Act, the Hamby case and the Hamby case, but the president really, his power is unchecked once he puts on his commander-in-chief cap.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is, for example, this war on terrorism, the president can define the United States as, quote, the theater of war, and once that definition is made, he's commander-in-chief, and his powers are almost unlimited. And the Supreme Court has made that possible. They have placed some checks on the president recently, but the overall trend is to what the framers would consider a dictatorship. So that sounds pretty strong, but I'm taking the long view, and that seems to be where events are leading us. So I wanted to write a book on how the Supreme Court has been complicit in not checking presidential power, but facilitating the expansion at a very dangerous rate and level.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on when that book is out and ready for purchase. And I will say that that was one of the things that I found most interesting about the book we're talking about tonight, was when you discussed the fact that Congress has basically given up their lawmaking powers to the president almost without a fight.
Yeah, it's been long in coming, but there's really a leadership void in Washington. A lot of that has to do with, something such as the 17th Amendment, where the progressives back in the turn of first quarter of the 20th century let senators be popularly elected.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been Supreme Court cases, Ray, where the court has specifically said that U.S. senators no longer represent states, that their constituents are national and international in scope.
Wow.
And that stems from the term limit case. But, we're in a heap of trouble, to put it bluntly. And hopefully we'll be able to at least, if not save the entire country, save a part or a portion of it.
Well, Professor DeRosa, are you a member of any Southern organizations you want to put a plug in for? We always, here at Dixie Broadcasting, try to encourage our listeners to join some of the good Southern organizations that are out there that are promoting states' rights and some of these ideas that you talk about in your book.
Yeah, I'm a board member on the Abbeville Institute, which is headed up by Dr. Livingston out of Emory, and I've done work with Dr. Clyde Wilson with the Stephen D. Lee Institute. So they keep me pretty busy, and those are real fine organizations because they focus attention on educating the South about true, accurate history and not the myths that they've been taught in the public school system and through the national media. So those are the two that I'm currently actively involved with.
Well, we certainly appreciate you taking your time to be on the program with us tonight here at Dixie Broadcasting. You certainly have plenty of friends here, so anytime we can do anything to help get the word out about anything you're involved with, you please let us know, and we'll be happy to do so.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate that.
All right, folks, we've been listening to an interview tonight, a Pelican Pages interview with Marshall DeRosa on his new book from Pelican entitled Redeeming American Democracy: Lessons from the Confederate Constitution. And I might also add, you can find some of the lectures and speeches by Professor DeRosa on the Confederate Constitution in the store at DixieBroadcasting.com. Just click on the Southern Liberty store there on the website for the radio station, and you'll find some of those lectures and speeches, and you'll enjoy those, I'm sure. Folks, until our next Pelican Pages segment, this is Ray McBerry, the president of Dixie Broadcasting, telling you thank you and hope you have a great evening. God bless you.
Okay, girls, it's time to stop buying all of those Yankee brand name clothes at ridiculous prices. Southern girls ought to be wearing Southern apparel, not something coming from New York. That's why Dixie Outfitters has stepped it up a notch and produced a new line of designer clothing just for ladies. It's called The Real South, and it looks as good as anything out there. Embroidered and printed shirts, low-rise jeans, shorts, skirts, pants, fleece jackets, and even undergarments. Top quality and classy apparel for ladies. You'll even be impressed with the logo that we've chosen, so that you can feel comfortable wearing it proudly for any occasion. So, ladies, now you have a way to show off your Southern pride and do it with a whole new style. The Real South, available only through Dixie Outfitters. Check out the entire line of Real South clothing at DixieOutfitters.com.
Do you belong to a Southern organization? Check out the League of the South today at DixieNet.org. That's DixieNet.org.
They've published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.